I love how you approach this. So it's less about what you get at the end of it and more about who you are as a person, making it easier to get those things with the things you can control.
Yeah, that's right. And then you turn around and you look at what you've got and you go, wow, my relationships are beautiful. Yeah. You know, yeah, beautiful. And to bring it back to sound, I find this is also fascinating. When we put things on vibration, so yes, your thoughts are powerful. And when you think something, but you also speak it or sing it, and when you put it on vibration, you bring it into the physical world amplified. And word is powerful. You know, if you ask the Indigenous Australians, the Aboriginals here, they tell you, the wise ones tell you that they sang the world into existence.
Welcome to Audio Branding, the hidden gem of marketing. Sound plays a more important role in human behavior and our decision-making than you may realize. In this podcast, I'll help you understand the art and science of sound so you can better influence others in business and your life. I'm your host, Jody Krangle. Let's delve a little deeper. Here's the second part of my conversation with Jem Fuller.
I've had people talk about public speaking on this podcast before, and one of the things they've all told me is take a deep breath and let it out, because that sigh relaxes you. If you're tense, it gives you more brain power to consider options to make sure that you are where you want to be.
It's a great one. I naturally sigh, and people who don't naturally sigh get benefits from sighing when they do. You know, it's like a release of energy. And if you're starting to feel a bit, you know, elevated or a bit anxious, then a big sigh can be really, really helpful. You just reminded me, Jody, of a time when I sighed and the person thought something was wrong. I don't so much anymore, but I used to tattoo people, but traditional tattooing, so without a machine, just all by hand. And I was tattooing a client and I was tattooing his back, and I got to a point and I just sighed, as I do, right? Nothing had gone wrong. I just did a big, you know, and he was like, what? Did you make a mistake? Have you tattooed me wrong? Did something go wrong? I'm like, no, I was just sighing, dude. It's something that I do.
Wow. Yeah, I guess for someone who isn't aware of how it works, that it might be a little alarming to have someone around you do that, because you don't quite know what it's for.
Why are you sighing? What just happened?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, getting back to the ego a little, I wanted to ask you how leaders can better communicate. And I'm assuming that leaders have a bigger ego, maybe, because that's how they got where they are. I could be wrong about that, but...
Some do, some don't. But it's interesting, because big ego can also be, so a big ego is a very strong ego. And you can have someone who has an inferiority complex, who thinks that they're terrible, no good, I'm hopeless, I'm useless, don't trust me, I can't do it. You know, so self-deprecating. And that can be a very big, strong ego as well.
So okay, big, true. Big ego, so the negatives too.
Yeah. So a big ego doesn't just mean that you've got a superiority complex where you think you're better than you are. It can also be the opposite way as well. So for leaders, it's a big part of their work. If you and the generalization that you proposed, I think there's definitely some trend or truth in that, because to be able to climb the corporate ladder, if you're in the corporate world, or to step up and say, yes, I'll take the lead, there has to be some sense of, you know, I can do this. And so it's interesting, because leadership really is an act of service, or it should be. You know, we should be leading with a servant's heart. You're there to serve the greater good. You're there to serve the people you're leading, and you're there to serve the end beneficiaries of whatever your organization does, the service or product that you provide. So it really should be an act of service on the one hand, so it shouldn't be about you, but on the other hand, it is about you, because it's about your ability to get out of your own way and not make it about you.
Yeah, that's right? A good point. Yeah, yeah.
So there's this beautiful thing, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just curious as to how many leaders you've met who have been pushed into that position as opposed to seeking it themselves.
So many leaders end up in leadership roles because of natural attrition. They've just been hanging around long enough and there's no one else to promote. And because they were really good on the tools and they were there long enough, they end up being asked to go into a leadership position. And quite often they say yes because it means they're going to earn more money. Mm-hmm. And they get there and there's no training. They don't get taught. And they struggle. You know, it's not easy. Leadership's not easy for everybody. For some people, they're naturally that way inclined and it works well for them. But yeah, so many people end up in the roles because of that.
So what do you tell people who are in that situation? Because, I mean, clearly it happens a lot.
Yeah. A lot of leaders struggle with, you know, what sort of a leader should I be? And there's so much literature out there. You know, there's so many books and there's so many courses and there's so many things about you should be more like this and you should be more like that. And it becomes overwhelming, especially for young leaders. It becomes overwhelming. And I like to facilitate for them to come to a place of authentic leadership. For me, I think if you were going to pick one of the leadership ideologies, I think authentic is really important. And I think that you shouldn't try and be more like anyone else. I think that you should be aspiring to be the best version of you and bring that to your leadership. And there's a really simple exercise that I talk people through to have an understanding, to get some clarity around the sort of leader that they should be. Would you like me to?
Oh, by all means. Yeah, yes.
Share that with you.
Yeah, please do.
Okay. So the experiment, the thought experiment is that you imagine that you're a fly on the wall at your funeral and you imagine that there is a loved one reading out your eulogy. And then you imagine, what words would you really hope to hear them say when they were describing the sort of person that you were? Right? Not what do you think they would say, but what would you really hope to hear them say when they're describing your character? And you write those words down: kind, generous, open-minded, loving, patient, caring, hardworking, whatever it was for you. Write those words down. The words you've written down are your core values. Right? So now you've got your core values in front of you. Next step, put those core values into an I am statement. So I am a kind, caring, generous, loving, action-taking man. Say, for example, that's mine. Then you switch out the last word for leader. I am a kind, caring, generous, open-minded, action-taking leader. And that's the type of leader that you should be aspiring to be each day, you know. And every time I run this exercise with a group of leaders, they get to the end of it and I ask them to look at it and I say, would you be happy if that was the sort of leader that you were working for? Would you be happy with that leader? And they look at those words and everyone says, yes, that's the type of leader that I would want to work for and that's the type of leader that I want to be. And it's right there in front of them.
Oh, that's wonderful. What a beautiful way to find your core values too.
Yeah,
interesting.
Takes you straight there.
Oh yeah, and that's really wonderful. So you're advocating for authentic leaders.
Yeah.
When you lead someone through an exercise like that, do they come to different conclusions, or is it all authentic?
Well, they come to an understanding of the type of person that they aspire to be.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you are, you know, if you're waking up in the morning and, you know, as you're getting ready to go out into the big wide world and do whatever it is that you do, if you are focusing on the type of person that you aspire to be in each moment, then I think you've got it the right way around, you know, because the quality of the character that you bring into each moment determines the quality of the things that you do, which then determines the likelihood of achieving the things that you want to have, the results you want to get. Rather than doing it the other way around, where you're just focusing on what you want to get, what you want to have, and then you do the things that you think you need to do to have that thing, and then who you're being is just as a result of the things that you're trying to get. you know, so you end up being ragged and tired and working too hard and run down and, you know, disconnected from the relationships that really matter to you, or depressed or anxious or whatever, all of these experiences of existing that happen as a result of chasing these things that you want to try and have, you know. And I think it's a really beautiful, not only philosophical but very practical way to approach each day, is to flip that have, do, be, and flip it around to be, do, have.
Yeah, so reverse engineering it, rather than trying to manufacture something that you may not really feel.
Do you want to sound your absolute best when you're being interviewed on a podcast or when you're hosting your own show? I have a podcast episode and free downloadable worksheet called Sounding Your Best as a Podcast Guest off of the audiobrandingpodcast.com main page. Just click on the little square graphic to the left of the player displaying my podcast trailer. It gives you some comprehensive suggestions for where to start or for improving the sound you already have, including the type of microphones to consider and why, ideas for soundproofing your recording environment, and suggestions on how to get the best sound when you're being remotely recorded on services like Riverside FM or Squadcast. Don't let bad audio quality hold you back from being the best podcast guest or host you can be. And of course, if you happen to need voiceover for your intro and outro, feel free to get in touch. I'm happy to help. And now, back to the podcast.
Yeah. And, you know, when we're always focused on the things we want to have, there are certain external factors that can prevent you from having those things. You know, I want to have $1 million a year paycheck. Well, that's going to be dependent on certain other factors as well, you know, or I want to have that big house, or I want to have that great relationship. And there are things that can be barriers or challenges to that. Whereas if you wake up in the morning and start with your I am statement, I am a kind, generous, caring, open-minded, action-taking man. And the reason I know that off by heart is because I say it out loud a lot.
Okay.
And the reason I say it out loud a lot is because it wires the neurology, right, into reflex neurology. And then when those the neurons are wired together, wired, quote unquote, wired together in that way, it becomes a belief. And when it becomes a belief, we filter the information from the outside world to match our belief. So you really do become your own self-fulfilling prophecy. That's why I do the affirmations. But no one can stop me from being those things. There's no obstacles. No one
can
stop me.
You have control over.
Right.
Yeah.
I can choose to be kind.
Mm-hmm.
I can choose to be loving. There's no barriers to you, you know, living your core values, or at least aspiring to be your core values in each moment. You can do that. So the fundamental quality of your experience of each moment is yours. No one can take that away from you. And I think that's, you know, it's a healthy foundation.
Very much so, yeah. And I love how you approach this. So it's less about what you get at the end of it and more about who you are as a person, making it easier to get those things with the things you can control.
Yeah, that's right. And then you turn around and you look at what you've got and you go, wow, my relationships are beautiful. Yeah.
You know,
yeah, beautiful. And to bring it back to sound, I find this is also fascinating. When we put things on vibration, so yes, your thoughts are powerful. And when you think something, but you also speak it or sing it, and when you put it on vibration, you bring it into the physical world amplified. And word is powerful. You know, if you ask the Indigenous Australians, the Aboriginals here, they tell you, the wise ones tell you, that they sang the world into existence. So the mountain only existed when we sang about it. And quantum physics also has a similar kind of thing with this, that certain things only become when we observe them and language them. You know, so word is powerful, and that's why part of the reason affirmations work when they're out loud is because of the vibration and the neurons firing together.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying that part of this discussion, because I think a lot of people, especially now, really need affirmations that are going to help them get through the day.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's tough out there. And and I think that things changed maybe a little bit after the pandemic or during the pandemic. I think a lot of us had problems communicating because we weren't seeing each other in like real life.
Yeah.
You know? So my question to you now is, how do you think communication changed during and after the pandemic? Because that's a big question. And I think it's a lot of where we find ourselves now.
Yeah. During and after the pandemic, and at the same time with all of, you know, the social media and the different communication platforms that are a lot of texting, you know, so communication has certainly been changing. And also because we're now more okay with virtual connection. So you and I have never been in the same room together, but we've formed a connection through being in virtual spaces a couple of times now. Mm-hmm. And humans are getting more and more comfortable with that. So the ability to form global networks has also, you know, been amplified as well. I've got a wonderful community of awesome people around the world that, you know, like-minded souls who are trying to make a difference, and we're connected, and none of us have been, well, not none of us, but most of us haven't been in the same room together. So that has also happened as well. But I mean, look, you know, through the pandemic, when people were forced into isolation, it's no wonder that depression and anxiety and suicide rates went through the roof.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because we need each other. We need to be connected. We're not built to be in isolation. And when someone is involuntarily in, you know, isolated, the ramifications are not good. So that was obvious through the pandemic. And I think for some people coming through that, they came to appreciate even more a hug, you know.
Yeah.
People
we had to
who
deal without
were,
that for a while.
Yeah. And people who weren't necessarily conscious of how good a hug is are now holding on to that hug just a little bit longer, you know.
Yeah.
So it's good.
Yeah. From this very introverted person's perspective, I have to say that it did get me more used to communicating in the way that we're doing right now, for instance.
Yeah.
And working on making a genuine connection when the person isn't in the room with me.
Yeah.
Because that is a different skill set. It's, you know, we're observing each other, but I'm not there. I'm not, you know. So there's some things that you kind of have to take for granted, I guess.
Yeah.
Because you're never going to know them.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, we can get a fair bit through the visual cue. I mean, you and I can see each other. And and there's also an extra level of intimacy because we're wearing these headphones. When you talk, you're actually in my head.
Yes. Yeah. And likewise. Yeah. So this is another thing that's changed, I think, a lot with the way that we experience sound in the world these days, because you know, we're talking about people who listen to Spotify all day, every day, whether it's a podcast, music, whatever, it's right in their ears because they're all listening on earphones or earbuds or whatever. And they're doing it while they're listening, while they're doing other things. So I think it's both conscious and unconscious, because we don't give sound as much thought, I guess, as it deserves, because it's so prevalent in everything we do. And now it's even more intimate than it ever was.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I often ask people why they think sound is important.
Mm.
And I'm curious as to your perspective on that, because it is a little philosophical, but I think also with what you talk about with communication, I think it's an important question, because I don't think a lot of people think about it.
No. Sound's important for so many reasons. You know, I think about the way I was as a father with our newborns, when the babies were newborn, and right through that period of, you know, when they need you for everything, whether it's feeding them or changing a nappy or holding them or rocking them or sleeping with them, all of that. And I sang to my boys almost all of the time, you know, when I was changing.
They'll remember that.
Oh, yeah. And
they
will
remember that. Yeah.
And the older one, he's 20 now. He still lives at home. I know when he's happy and content because he hums incessantly. He just can't stop humming, you know, and it's music to my ears. Some other people around are like, can you stop humming? But I know I know when he's happy because he's and it's very soothing, you know, it's a really soothing thing. And I think when you and I first met, we might have spoken about this, but I read a book that was talking about, it was written by an evolutionary biologist and who had been working with anthropologists to understand, you know, our evolution as a species. And we've come to understand that I can't remember if it was tens of thousands of years or hundreds of thousands of years before language, before words, we had the embouchure characteristics to sing. So to hum or to sing, to make sound. And so they believe that we would communicate through singing to each other without words, you know, and like birds do.
Yeah. You know.
And that's I love that. I think that's just so beautiful, and it makes so much sense because the tonality communicates so much more than the actual word itself anyway, you know.
Very true. Mm. Yeah. There's so much to examine about this and to explore and understand about us as human beings. And what I love most about music particularly is that it's a universal language.
Yeah.
That we all understand it in our bones. We get it.
Yeah, we just get it. It's in us. Yeah. It's right there. It's nothing, you don't need to intellectualize the sound of a major chord. It just immediately feels like it feels, or the sound of a minor chord, or a, you know, yes, I love that. It's deeply ingrained in us.
Yeah, yeah. And I think we should be looking for more things that we have in common with each other.
Oh,
these
yes,
days
please.
Especially.
Oh, hallelujah to that.
Yeah.
Hallelujah to that. And we don't have to look that far.
No, we really don't.
You know,
don't.
Like when you're sitting with someone and you're sitting with someone who seems to be completely opposite to you in so many ways, you only just need to talk about your babies, your kids, and how much you love them to see that you've got that in common. We all need shelter. We all need food and water. We all grieve when someone dies. We all have the same color blood. Oh my, like heaven forbid, right? We all bleed the same color blood.
Yeah.
We all have a heart. We all have lungs. There's so much that we have in common. And in fact, the stuff that we have in common is the more real stuff. The stuff that we don't have in common is just the made up stuff. Like you've made up an idea about, you know, politics, or you've made up an idea about religion. Mm-hmm. We made these ideas up to try and understand life and our experience within it. And just because we made up some different ideas, that doesn't mean that we're actually really that different from each other, you know.
So true.
Thanks for taking the time to listen. Quick question. Do you know anyone else who could benefit from hearing more about how powerful sound can be? If so, would you mind sharing this podcast with them? It would mean so much to me. Now, I'll stop interrupting and let you get back to the show.
I hope that the person listening to this will take it to heart.
Yeah, I hope so too. And, I think that we're driven by fear, right? Fear is probably the first automatic response to a situation that is or isn't threatening, but fear. So if you and I were walking through the forest and we heard a rustling in the grasses next to us, the first thing that you do is jump and think it's snake, right? Mm. If you live somewhere where there's snakes, which I do.
Yes.
Right. And it's only until you see that it's a little blue wren fossicking for a worm that you relax and you go, oh, it's just a little bird. Right. But prior to that, your first assumption is danger. And so when we see something different to us, people respond with a fear response, which is interesting. And so I think that in the evolution of us and for us, as we become more conscious, more loving, coming from love rather than fear, more abundance, which we're having now. The fear and the scarcity came from times when there wasn't enough resource. You know, mm-hmm. Your village, your tribe was over there and my tribe was here and there wasn't enough food and we had to fight for it, right? That was scarcity. It doesn't need to be like that anymore. We've actually got the resource and the technology. If we came together and worked it out, we can feed all of us. And more as energy becomes cheaper, more and more we've got the ability for abundance. And so we don't need to come from fear as much anymore. And it's so heartbreaking for me to watch countries warring with each other over religion and ideas.
Oh,
because,
yeah.
Because the resource would actually be there for all of us to live and get along. So to the listener, if you ever notice yourself fearful of someone because of difference, lean into that. Go and sit down with them. Have a cup of tea. Sit down, have a cup of tea together. Get curious about them, what they care about, what are they passionate about, what are their joys and what are their pains, and you'll see they're actually really similar to yours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a wonderful thing to sort of end this on. I have a little more to ask you.
Uh-huh.
I do want to ask you what you're working on now, if you want to talk a little about that. Are you working on another book? Are you doing a course?
Yes, I am. I'm writing another book, which is how to have that conversation.
Okay.
And that conversation is the one you've been avoiding, the can you've been kicking down the road going, oh, I really should have that conversation with that person, but I'm just going to put it off a bit longer.
So for those of us who hate confrontation.
Yes.
I love it.
Yes.
Do you know what it's called yet, or you're not that far along?
Look, the working title is How to Have That Conversation.
And okay.
I just did a TEDx talk on it a few weeks ago. I'm waiting for the post-production of that to go up onto YouTube. So that's the book that I'm writing. My big project that I'm super excited about is the retreat that we've been running in the Himalayan mountains in India for a long time with a family that has been my adopted family over there since the 90s.
Oh, wow.
I've been really curious around how we can amplify our impact. So we're taking that retreat and taking it to the next level in terms of the people that we're going to attract and help. And part of what we facilitate for people who come on that retreat is for them to have a very clear understanding of their meaningful contribution. So when they go home, what can they engage in philanthropically or, you know, charity-wise, which is exciting because then the ripples become waves of contribution,
oh, yeah.
which I'm passionate mm-hmm. about. And we have a vision. Well, I have a vision. My beautiful partner, Talia, is there with me. But I have a vision. We've been given a small piece of land on the side of a mountain in the forests of the Himalaya up there in India. And I want to build the center of love, and it's going to be a conference center, a modest conference center with accommodation. And we're going to manifest this beautiful building and it's a not-for-profit initiative. And then we're going to invite positive souls from around the world to come and sit and eat together, break bread together, and to meditate together, and then come into a collective consciousness and communicate hopefully some solutions for some of the problems that humanity struggles with.
Wonderful. And definitely we could use a lot more of that. So I love that. That's such a wonderful initiative. So how could people get in touch with you if they want to do that?
They can go to jemfuller.com and everything is there. You get links to all my socials and my courses and how to get in touch with me. You can, you know, use the contact form there if you want to reach out and say hi. I'm very approachable. I'm open to meeting people and saying hi and connecting. If you want to follow me, I post mostly on Instagram, Jem Fuller, and I'm on LinkedIn, Jem Fuller. It's all the same.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Jem. This has been really enlightening as a conversation, and I learned quite a lot just having this conversation with you. So thank you so much for that communication.
Yeah, thanks, Jodi. I've really loved being on the show with you.
Well, that's the end of this episode. Thanks for listening. And if you like what you heard, why not tell a friend about this podcast? It's available in all the usual locations. Until next time.